Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
This is Montrell Johnson, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, citizens of the universe, this is Roster Watch. My name is Alex Dunlap. I'm joined by Cody Carpentier. And Cody, man, I guess Jordan Schultz fibbed to us yesterday about this Ted McMillan 40-yard dash at 4.48 at Arizona Pro Day. We've gotten now word today from what was it? Was it Albert Breer and who else? Dane Brugler saying this thing was a pro day hand timed for between a 4.55 and a 4.57?
Yeah. So on the show yesterday when we were live, it came out that it was the 4.48. But since then, there's been a bevy of numbers. From Breer, it was 4.54 to 4.57. Another scout had 4.52. And then Dane Brugler said 4.55, 4.55. So I think a lot of the people in the consensus kind of just ran to conclusion. They're like, oh, 4.48. And you know how some people are. This is a big conversation in that when I was at Player Profile, we actually wrote a column. I wrote an article. It was a project that me and Josh Larkey kind of took on. Larkey, great R coding guy, and dug back and collected all of our data that we had been collecting for the combine and the pro day, and found and actually gave reason or understanding to why we generally put, you know, the 0.05 on top of these pro day 40 yard dash numbers. We can talk about that a little bit further, but there's a lot of people out there that just take the pro day number for what it is, and they're like 4.48. 4.48. That's what he ran. That's what it is. It's the same thing. It's what he would have run at the combine. They just don't understand it. So if you're in the X or the Twitter sphere, you may feel this like weird dynamic of people right now that are A, looking at Ted as a 4.48 guy, or B, kind of in our boat where it's like, well, the official number that we come in and we understand is from the draft guys, right? Jordan Schultz gets a lot of things right, but from draft guys and guys that talk to scouts more often than I think probably does, from like a Dane Brugler's perspective, who comes in and goes, 4.55, 4.55. That's what two teams told me. All right, well, that's what two out of 32 NFL teams we know have in their book. That's our pro day number. So we generally would add 0.05 of a second to it, and that would make it a 4.60. So you see the crazy dynamic here of people viewing this guy as a 4.48 guy and a 4.60 guy. It's two vastly different things.
It's gonna make for the difference between like I would guess like an 80+ percentile speed score versus something that's going to be like a 40th percentile speed score. You know what I mean? It's like it's going to be a big difference. And people say it's like, oh, what is it? You're talking about a 10th of a second or whatever. It's like, well, I mean, they run the drills for a reason. They are a statistical marker for us for a reason. I would say for us, what are you thinking we should put in for our prospect modeling and for our just general thoughts? Because we do, I mean, I think what the best thing to do might be is just take the, do we just throw out the 4.48? Do we just say scouts didn't say that? That's Ted McMillan's agent, because that's who Jordan Schultz talks to. He doesn't talk to area scouts.
that's where I would lean to just kind of throw out that 448 number because of exactly what you just said. I believe when you have to understand where you're deciphering different information from. When you are getting your breaking news, trade happens, breaking news, free agent signing, I'll go to Schultz. And obviously, you'll get your Rappaport and Schefter. But there's a reason that Rappaport and Schefter don't dip their toe into 40-yard dash times and things of this nature. It's because it's like you're talking to an agent that wants to get something out there. And so there might have been one or two people in that building that clocked the 448. And I don't have my timer. My timer's over there. And I can show you right now. It's literally bang, right? You and me know this. But
yeah.
When you're in that building, there's 100 people doing it. And there's how many people that are on that 40-yard dash line getting an exact number, right? It's just scouts. When you're at these pro days,
So there's a three-level. There's a three-level little thing. So there's one who sits in the chair and then one that sits on the bench, one that's one level up, one that's another level up, and those are the four guys with the prime seats. After the pro day's over, what they do, it's after all the testing is over, right? They go into the big huddle with the scouts. And if you're just swindly enough, you can go in there and you can try and listen in. Generally, they're going to recognize you as not being a scout and tell you to get the heck out. But during that time, they all get together and they're like, they read it all off. Just they make sure that they have everything. They go through one prospect and they say, all right, we're all good on the 10-4 broad and we're all good on the 38-inch vertical and like the ones that we all saw, the 17 reps on bench. But now let's talk about the times, right? And they all get together and they'll keep their own time for the pro day. But this is mainly for players that didn't test at the combine. They'll have their own time from the pro day. And then they'll have the official pro day time among scouts that was come to as the consensus there that they will use in much the same way that if you're at the combine, you'll see, or if you ever watch it on TV and they pan to the stadium seating, you'll see going 50 rows up, sitting exactly on the 40-yard line is every scout from every team who's going to be there right there on the 40. And that guy's going to take that team's 40, right? And they'll use that along with the official 40 from the NFL. But sometimes these teams, they're old school, and they'll use their own 40, and they'll weigh that into the modeling or into the evaluation even more than the official one that's timed by like a computer and lasers and stuff like that. So I understand what you're saying, Cody. It's like if you're a Adam Schefter or you're an Ian Rappaport or all that, there's an implicit understanding with these guys when they're dealing with agents is that I understand that you're giving me this scoop about this guy, expecting something, maybe a little something in return.
Here's the other thing. Like, I'll just say this. The Big 12 is having its pro day together in Dallas this week. There's no video footage of this either.
Okay.
There's none. And he's not participating in the Big 12 pro day. He did his own pro day yesterday.
Yeah.
So we may have a Sean Tucker thing on our hand too.
Well, is this – this is not a Sean Tucker. He didn't do this in his backyard with his friends timing.
How do you know?
Well,
because there are scouts there. I get that as a joke, but I'm just saying, like, there's no real proof of anything.
Sean Tucker's buddies, like, holding his iPhone and doing.
But here's my point is that also, like, the stuff from Breer and Brugler came out like 4 hours after the Schultz thing. The Schultz one came out like right now yesterday, and it was like Tet just ran.
That was his agent who was
Tet
who
just
was
ran.
You're not going to be able to talk to a scout right after that because the scouts Bingo. Are busy doing their huddle. They're busy getting ready for the on-field work. These scouts are saying like, all right, who are we going to have run the Deuce Staley drill? Like, can we get homeboy to come run that since Deuce isn't here? You know, stuff like that, right? They're not texting Jordan Schultz. You know, so I think that's probably what it is. And I think for him, we should probably throw that one out. We heard some stuff about a 4.2. We heard some stuff about a 4.454. Brugler said he heard 2 4.55s. I think that they probably came to a consensus at 4.55.
Yep.
And I think just to give Tetman Milne a little bit of grace, we should put him in at 4.59 since a 4.52 and a 4.54 do exist.
4.54, 4.55 do exist.
And also it feels like artificially manually adjusting some dude to 4.6, which feels like adjusting him to the threshold where you start to say like, man, he's starting to be like, man, am I a little bit legit worry about the speed. Yep. Right. Do I want to adjust him to that, or do I want to adjust him to just under that, where it's still something where it's right there on the precipice of being a little bit of a significant worry? I think that's probably the right thing to do for our modeling and evaluation purposes. But if you think we should bump him to 5.46, that's fine. I'd be interested to talk to Matt Kelly what they're going to do over there.
So Matt tweeted out last night after the 4.48. He didn't see the 4.55 stuff. I'll be interested to see what he says today. But he had tweeted out 4.48 to 4.53.
Yeah.
I will just say, from the column that we did a couple of years ago, we gathered data from 2010 to 2019. And I know I'm only going to rehash this, Alex. You know this already, but I'm only going to rehash this for the audience that maybe is like partially keeping along. But
what are they talking about?
Of the adding time onto the 40. We did data research for all players that A, ran just the combine, B, ran just the pro day, and C, ran both the combine and the pro day in the same given year. Between 2010 and 2019, 74 running backs did both the pro day and the combine. Their pro day number was on average 6/100ths of a second faster. So they ran a 4.61 at the combine. They ran a 4.55 at the pro day. Wide receivers, there was 85 of them. The combine number was 4.55 on average. The pro day number was 4.49 on average, as far as like the growth in movement here. Tight end, it was 4.82 to 4.74. So there's a little bit bigger discrepancy. But there's a discrepancy in pro day versus combine because of laser time at the combine and hand times at the pro day. And that is why we're talking about making that adjustment. And that's just a historical thing that specifically Player Profiler's done. And like I said, they wrote about it, and that we've been going through in our process.
Do that by the eyeball test, like without any research.
Yeah.
We've always manually adjusted pro day time.
That's why we wrote the column, though, because everyone's like, "Were you making this up out of thin air? You just believe this? Like, where's your facts?"
Because it only makes sense. Do you know what it is, Cody? It's more about the start. It's more about getting the start right. Getting the end right, you're right there on the line, right? It feels like you can do that. But at the very start, when you're 40 yards away, it's really, really hard. It's like 5/100ths of a second is nothing.
Yeah.
It is just nothing. And from the time when you start taking the time from their arm's back to where it starts moving forward. Right. That's why whenever they get a false start, it's whenever they don't hold it back there long enough to let everybody get ready for them to say like, all right, I'm ready for you to go. Whenever you go is when I'm going to click this button. Right. Well, they have an electronic timer that does that. So whenever your brain, it just takes your brain, the synapse in your brain, like your brain's an awesome computer, but it's just the information you can't get from your eyes to your brain, down your arm, to your thumb, to hit the button. It takes like 5/100ths of a second. And whenever that time is taken off from the beginning of the run, even if you nail the end of the run, it's going to be faster. So the laser component is just super important at the very beginning of it. And that's always been obvious to us. And I'm glad that you have the research that verifies it, because it makes all the sense in the world. And that's how we've always done it. So it just feels weird having to take Tet and say like, well, all this stuff was a 4.48. I don't necessarily think he was like slow, you know, and you have to manually adjust him to 4.6 territory, which feels like kind of danger territory.
He's not a game breaker, though. That's the thing. Like, people are like, well, he's not slow. If you're claiming 4.48 and we're claiming 4.59, it's really not that big of a difference other than historical trend purposes. Like, looking at historical trends is the only thing that tells you that, like, per Daniel Jeremiah, like, there's been no receivers drafted in the last 20 years that ran more than a 4.55 in the top 15. Nobody's drafted in the top 15 a wide receiver ran more than a 4.55. Now, he ran exactly a 4.55 at the pro day, but when you adjust, like we just explained, Mike Williams was the last guy from USC in 2005 that fit that number. So historical trends would tell you it makes a difference from a player perspective, we know what Tet is. This isn't something that's going to make us say, well, Tet's now the receiver seven. No, that's not what's going to happen here. It's more of just analyzing and understanding.
It makes it easier for me to not have him my wide receiver one.
Correct.
Which is where we've been the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, been a little bit lower on Tet than the rest, but saying he's good. And he's got Drake London. He's got Drake London type stuff in his range of outcomes. He also has Christian Watson stuff in his range of outcomes. And to be honest, like we talked about yesterday, the guy looks a lot more like Christian Watson. Does he have Equanimeous St. Brown in his range of outcomes?
Listen, man, here's my thing. I didn't know you were going to go that direction, but I was going to bring up the same kind of topic and thought is, what do you make of the general consensus? Because you've been on the game for 15 years, longer than I have in total. What do you make of the general thought to all of the people, you know, on social media, on podcasts, whatever it may be, that instantly run to best case scenario? They go, well, Mike Evans, you know, he was a 4.50 guy. Or they go, well, where'd you have Brian Thomas last year? Or, yeah, but everybody missed on Justin Jefferson because, you know, he ran a 4.448 or four, whatever the hell it was, 4.44. It was like,
no one missed on Justin Jefferson.
He didn't go in the top. He didn't go in the top 10. He went 21st overall. But you see what I'm pointing, though. These are literal tweets. These are literal tweets. And they go, well, you know, what about Brian Thomas or what about Mike Evans for a comper? Well, he's definitely Drake London. And like, they run to best comp is what I'm saying.
But Brian Thomas ran fast.
Again, the Brian Thomas thing's not the point of my topic here. The point of bringing up Brian Thomas was more so people saying, well, you don't have Tet McMillan as a top 10 player. Well, where'd you have Brian Thomas last year? But my question to you is, when you look at comps, people run to best comp. And even if they hear something negative about a player, like he might have ran a little bit slower than we expected, or I don't have him graded as a top 10 player. He's not a top 10 graded prospect, period. He's a first round graded prospect. He's not a top 10 graded prospect. They go, yeah, but Drake London. Yeah, but Mike Evans. And they just go to best case scenario, best comp scenario. Like, what is your kind of, what goes through your train of thought when you either read that or when you think about a comp? Do you think of best case scenario just latch on, or like the Christian Watson thing you brought up, where I know Equanimeous St. Brown is pukey, but Equanimeous St. Brown's a better athlete than Tet McMillan.
Is that true?
Look it up.
Okay. I've to be honest, man, with the whole, I never understood though. I still don't understand what happened with EQ St. Brown. You know,
4.48, 94th percentile speed score.
Okay. I remember covering that draft. That was the one where we were in Dallas. That was the same draft where like Connor Williams went to the Cowboys and Dallas Goedert went to the Eagles, right? Was that same draft, right?
2018, yeah.
I kept on saying, I'm just like, why is Equanimeous St. Brown, why does he keep falling? What's going on here? I was just like going nuts on the radio there, I think. How do you respond to people always going to the best comp? It's just
not really how you respond to it, but what's kind of your thought process behind it? Like when you see it, you're like, you kind of have to phase it out. You kind of just have to be like, yeah, I understand the comp. Like I understand how you see T. Higgins and Drake London, but how do you decipher that in your brain and kind of let it infiltrate your process?
I think that, look, I think I don't let it infiltrate my process. I think comps are useful for us whenever I look at our sheets and I'm like, well, these are players who we watch a lot of football. We've been doing this professionally for a long time. And you can look at our sheet and you can say like, I think for, you know, fans or people who are consuming our content, certainly our pro members and stuff, when we get our sheet up, they're just to say the type of player that you sort of see whenever you see these guys, you know, others that reminded you of them more so as they were prospects than they were at the NFL level. Right. And so if you're just looking at some of the guys at the very top, you know, you think to yourself, well, for like Tet McMillan, we have guys like, you know, maybe a T. Higgins or a Drake London or a Christian Watson, or on the low end, maybe a Justin Ross or an EQ St. Brown, something like that. Whereas with, say, a Mecca Ibuka, right? You say like, well, with that, you just kind of, you have a couple of, you know, like a Robert Woods and a Jarvis Landry, stuff like that. You think to yourself, well, that's probably about, you know, the feels like that's probably
a range of outcome.
Probably a kind of maybe a higher floor type of player, but neither of those guys you see, you know, I don't see Emeka Egbuka as somebody who is, I think he's really good. I'm not sure, you know, he's not as dynamic a weapon as some of the other guys in this class. Right. And then you can look at guys like Matthew Golden. And for him, we have stuff like Odell Beckham Jr. And, you know, Diggs didn't get drafted that highly. Jordan Addison did. I think that's a good comp as well. And then with like, you know, Luther Burden, as you're sort of putting all these guys together, right? Like with Luther Burden, he kind of has some Terry McLaurin to him, right? And you're just like, well, if in the end, as I'm kind of splitting hairs and grading between these guys, who do I want? Do I want the guy that's got the Odell Beckham stuff to him, the Terry McLaurin stuff? Like, it helps me to think back personally about what I thought about those guys as prospects. But as far as saying like, Jerry Rice ran a 4.66 or Cooper Kupp ran in the 4.6s. Like, what about them? It's like, well, sometimes guys are unicorns and no one's going to, those two players in particular, no, you're not going to find any company that loves those two guys that I just happened to bring up more than roster watch. Right.
That's all play style goes into that, right?
Yeah. But it's like, when people say, well, what about Mike Evans or what about Drake London? It's just like, well, that, you know, you love the draft and that's cool. And you might love this player and you can see it. And if you see that, that's fine. But it's nothing that it would ever go into my process. It's just something that's a neat little thing. Say like, who's this guy reminds you of? It might help people who might not have seen him as much. I know we have a lot of fans that aren't necessarily draft first that are, you know, a vast majority of the people that listen to this show are fantasy football and dynasty league football first, right? And they play pick'em games and, you know, player props and stuff like that. And then during this time of year, they get into the draft because they want to know what's going to happen with their fantasy teams, right? That's why we're not on here that often. I mean, we do it. We're not here that often breaking down corners or defensive tackles and stuff. So that's the value that I see in comps. Gives us just a little bit more of an encompassing view of sort of what you see in the player. And when you talk about these traits, you're like, whenever you put these traits together, right, it looks like a player kind of like this in our experience. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I see it.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Right. What about Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft? So he has Ted McMillan sliding.
Yes. So Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, we're going to recap it really quick. He had all 32 picks up at NFL.com, his mock 3.0. He actually, you know, talking about Ted McMillan, had him falling to pick 22 to the Los Angeles.
So he's falling to the Chargers. I'm sorry to interrupt. But before you start with the picks, I was really intrigued by something you said before we got on the show, saying that you had some notes about what happened in Daniel Jeremiah's changes between his mock 2.0 and his mock 3.0 last year.
Yep.
That you thought we could take some insight away from. And I think that that's interesting to me because, as we know, Daniel Jeremiah is one of these guys that does talk to a bunch of scouts. It does kind of have his finger on the pulse of things. So what was that stuff?
So in mock 3.0 last year, he had four picks on the nuts. He had Caleb Williams first overall to the Bears. In the mock 2.0, he had him also to the Bears. Obviously, everybody did. Number four overall was when he made his big move, which was J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings. Remember, Minnesota was the one that traded with Houston. So they had two first round picks, and then he was projecting another trade up to four. So JJ to the Minnesota Vikings at four, formerly had McCarthy to the Falcons. At six, he put Malik Nabers to the Giants. He said, I wouldn't rule out the Giants trading up for a quarterback this year. If they stick and pick at six, adding Nabers' playmaking ability would be a good move. And then at nine, he had Roma Dunze, who he also had in the previous mock. Now, here's the interesting thing. That was all from mock 3.0, which is what he – that was from 2024. And then today is mock 3.0, which he released. Mock 2.0 last year, he had a couple of those ones above wrong. But between pick 11 and 25, he had five more correct. He had Dallas Turner attached to the Vikings. He had Byron Murphy attached to the Seahawks because of Leonard Williams being an independent free agent. He had Troy Fatanu, the offensive lineman from Washington, attached to the Steelers because they need to invest in the offensive line. He had Darius Robinson, the defensive lineman from Missouri, attached to the Arizona Cardinals. And he had Tyler Guyton, the Oklahoma tackle, who was, remember last year, on the fringe of first-round conversation because of his leaner build, and he had a good senior bowl. But they had Tyron Smith enter free agency. He had all of those guys attached. So across these two mocks, mock 2.0 and 3.0, he had a total of nine picks correct. In February and March, which to me is impressive. I know people are going to go, well, what's the record? The record is 16 in a mock, but that mock is done the night before the draft when there's considerably more information given to you. And Daniel Jeremiah is one of the, you know, he's not the best, but he's one of the better mock drafters in the Huddle Report. He had seven total matches last year in his night before the NFL draft mock. He had seven in mock 2.0. last year in February. And a lot of those were the connections made there. So I'm kind of on my way writing through here, trying to kind of decipher some notes from this year's mock 2 and 3.0. So I'm halfway through that. I might, you know, we might talk about that later in the week or something. So if I find any cool nuggets or anything, but mock 3.0 is up. We'll walk through it right now. I want to get your reaction for some of these picks.
All right. Do you want to roll them off? We can just talk about them.
Yeah, I'll talk them through. You think I should share them up on? Think I should share the screen for those on YouTube?
I think that's probably legal, right? They don't mind getting the pub at NFL.com.
It's 100% legal. I was just wondering from a view perspective. I think it might look. If I go here, put us on the side.
Yeah, but the format.
And then I go here. How's that?
I don't know. It looks weird.
Hell, what is happening there?
Well, it's got the thing down the middle because it's, yeah. Let's just talk.
All right. Number one overall, Cam Ward. That was a move he made. He had Abdul Carter number one. Now he has Cam Ward. It's kind of one that a lot of people are kind of been falling in line to. Abdul Carter two.
Now, all right. So I find that interesting.
Okay. What's your thoughts?
Well, for one, I'm just like, until I find out anything different, I'll be plugging for the Huddle Report. I'll be plugging him into Cam Ward to Tennessee, right?
Yep.
So when we get to two, Cleveland, we talked about it yesterday. The draft's a flat circle, all this stuff. I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. And I just wonder if things go like this, look, I love Abdul Carter, right? No one's talked more about his get off, and just that particular trait is one that I'm so in love with. But I don't know if I see. Here's my issue, and it might just be the way I'm trying to construct it in my head. Cleveland and New York both, Shedeur Sanders is not getting out of that area, right? He just isn't. And as much as people are saying that they don't think he's worth that pick, and as much as I'm saying I have a lot of concerns about Shedeur Sanders, I'm not sure I'd be interested. I'm not sure that I'd be interested in being the GM that was attached to that pick at two or three, right? But I think at some point you gotta have a quarterback, unless you're just planning on, you know, I don't know what else would you be planning on doing? And so the other thing that comes up to me with this is that I do think that the Patriots are are primed to take an offensive lineman there. And so I know that I really do think that Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, and Abdul Carter, along with Hunter, are going to be the first three of those four are going to be the first ones off the board. I don't know how far Hunter falls if he happens to get past pick four to the Patriots and they forgo him to go with an offensive lineman, because we do know that the Patriots, didn't they bring in Carlton Davis?
Yes, they brought in Carlton Davis.
And they got Gonzalez.
It was Carlton 3-year 60, and then they brought in Milton Williams to play defensive line.
But how far can Travis Hunter really fall? And do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and do you forego offensive line there if you're New England? I just wonder, maybe I could be wrong. Maybe I could be wrong. And the Cleveland Browns just say, look, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this with Shedeur Sanders. I don't know how the Giants could not do it. Right?
You don't know how they couldn't do Shedeur?
Yes.
Well, I think the Aaron Rodgers thing has a lot of weight here in the Pittsburgh conversation and the Giants conversation, as does Russell Wilson, who visited Cleveland and is in the process of visiting New York. But I guess the question would have to be, how much weight do you think acquiring a Russell Wilson would have on a franchise like the Giants not drafting a quarterback? Like, do you think a Russ is enough for Daboll and Shane to be like, you know what, we got Russ this year, let's just see what happens? Or do you think they would go, we got Russ, let's buy Shedeur and see if we can buy ourselves another year in case this Russ thing doesn't work?
And then more and more I think about it, it's like, I don't know that the Browns can do this either. They're not going to have anybody else but besides Kenny Pickett.
Well, I think they're in the Russ and Kirk conversation that we talked about the other day.
Yeah, but the Kirk conversation is really shutting down really fast with right now.
What about Derek Carr after June 1st?
Well, I would think that if it's post June 1 for Derek Carr, that would have meant that Shedeur Sanders somehow slipped to 11.
You mean
nine? Sorry, whatever.
No, you're good.
I think that means that Shedeur somehow slipped. Because what happens different with them? Are they just going to go with Spencer Rattler?
Hey, man, I mean, technically they should, and they should just eat the whole season and see what Spencer Rattler is. They should. I mean, I think
– I hope that doesn't happen for my Chris Olave stuff. My God.
Well, I mean, we just need Olave to get healthy just in general. I would – you know, for Dynasty Shares, I have a ton of Olave, but I wouldn't even mind if he just, you know, took the year off and, you know, just did some brain strength. I don't even know what to say.
Take a year off in your prime, Olave. Goodness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a guy that can last a little bit. But anyway – so Abdul goes two here in this mock. In mock 2.0, Jeremiah had him first. Then he has Shedeur going three to the Giants. He says if Abdul Carter is available at three, that might change things. But in this scenario, they secure their answer at quarterback. For me, the Abdul thing, I understand it. I don't know if he's available at three and both quarterbacks are gone. How, if you're the Giants, do you not take like Hunter over Abdul Carter, given what your team is? Like, given, hey, you could have Hunter and Malik Nabers on offense catching passes from whoever, whether it's Russ or Rodgers, and then have him playing cornerback opposite of Deontay Banks. Or you could have an Abdul Carter where you've kind of been expending some draft capital and money in Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau the last couple of years.
So you think Russ is this much more likely for – so much depends on Aaron Rodgers, goodness.
Yeah, I think the Rodgers thing to the Steelers is the most likely, and then Russ goes to whoever he deems the most competent, which is, I would bet, the Giants over the Browns, just given the quarterback situation in Cleveland. And I think the Cleveland is the one left holding their job.
Is Deion going to let Shedeur go to the Browns?
Yeah, they said. I mean, this is what Todd McShay had his show this morning. I caught the first part of it. He said that he believes that it's alive. Shedeur too is alive and well.
Alive or alive?
Alive and well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I don't know, man. That's going to be interesting. I think if I had to put money on it right now, it could be totally wrong. Shedeur could fall. I think that maybe he should, but I kind of don't think he will.
Here's about him falling. You think he might fall?
No, I mean, he could, yeah, I think he might, but I just kind of don't, I kind of don't think he will though.
So I did a, I do my, my daily show with the draft ranking show. It's like a sub 10 minute show. I've told you about it, but I pre-recorded for tomorrow. I did a 10 minute mock, all 32 picks in less than 10 minutes. And I didn't mock Shador Sanders, and I didn't realize it until I was done.
Well, I think
I haven't released it yet.
I think the comment section will let you know. You might want to go through and redo that one.
Yeah. So fourth overall, Travis Hunter goes to New England. We talked about this one the other day. On my mock on Friday, I kind of wrote, and I didn't write in my thoughts, but when I did the recap show on Friday, I talked about how I believe this fourth overall pick is between Travis Hunter and Kelvin Banks. I think the Kelvin Banks thing is very quiet right now, but I think how that New England spent their money in Carlton Davis and Milton Williams and then getting Morgan Moses to play right tackle, it, to me, it's left tackle or Travis Hunter.
Yep. I think that we'll see a little bit of a creep up here for Kelvin Banks with the like the short arm stuff not necessarily answered with the 33 and a half inch arms. You wanted to be 34, but the fact that his wingspan was third biggest of anybody among the offensive line, it's like, who cares how long the arms are if the wingspan is that long? Will Campbell, you know, yada yada, only one starter in the league with arms his length. They need a true offensive tackle. I've said it before, we talked about it yesterday, I think that Mimbu would be live here too, but a true left tackle in Kelvin Banks, who played that his whole career at Texas for three like just sterling years, to go with the, what is it, Morgan Moses?
Yeah.
With Morgan Moses, who they say is a right tackle all the way. So there's nobody that this pisses off more than the other expansion, the other cat expansion team here with Jaguars taking Jalen Walker at five. I wonder who that leaves for Carolina here in a minute, with the Raiders taking Ashton Jeanty, which is probably our most commented on short video, Cody, saying that they're not going to take Jeanty or McMillan.
You know, watch, they're going to do it too. And that video is going to pop and go for like,
they're going to say, hey, way to go, Nostradamus, you couple of geniuses.
Those are the best.
Yeah.
That's a high pick, man. I can see it now with Pete Carrolltown taking over and them not really doing much at running back. They acquired Raheem Mostert, who's kind of got that, formerly had that long speed, that sort of dynamo open field thing that Jeanty has. I mean, I get it. I'd rather see them spend it on like Membu or something here, but
no.
Running back later.
What else we got?
Membu.
Right
tackle for the Jets.
There you go. And you feel like with it looks like he mentions it here at pick eight, but with Mason Graham, who, you know, we've talked about this before, but we've said this whole time that Mason Graham, just go watch the Michigan tape. And just stick with that, because he was always going to be a guy who's going to come in and not be as impressed. He's not going to be a like a Eamon Worry or a
freak athlete. Yeah.
You know, one of these guys that comes into the combine and all of a sudden you just get a look at him and you're like, oh man, what's time that, you know, Shamar Stewart, just like, oh gosh, this is this guy is a complete physical specimen and just a ridiculously physically gifted guy. He's kind of looks smaller than you would have thought, and he's got shorter arms and all this, but he's a Tasmanian devil. And we know that the Carolina Panthers, we've heard from sources very inside that club, that they're really planning on taking edge here. But with the pursuit of, as they said, Milton Williams, they came up short on him whenever he goes to New England. Now, they did get Bobby Brown from the Rams, so they already have kind of, you know, three technique settled to a certain degree. Bobby Brown's a good player. But I think that Mason Graham's clearly, to me, one of the top five, six players in this whole – I think top five in this whole draft if you just look at the tape. And you get him at a position of need. We know that the focus of the Panthers draft this year is going to be almost entirely on defense. And you spearhead it with a Mason Graham, I think it makes sense. I mean, see what you think about Jahad Campbell here at nine.
Jahad Campbell's not one I expected to see all the way up here. I'll tell you that much.
Too high.
Yeah, it's not what I expected to see up here, that's for sure. The last mock he had him at 29. I believe the mock before that, he didn't even have him in round
one. He's hearing something that there's smoke on Jahad Campbell.
Correct. That's exactly what you read through that. And he attached him to Brandon Staley here as a creative defensive coordinator. So in New Orleans shoes, you know, being the team in the NFL in the most debt and in the most bass-ackwards situation right now in comparison to what we've seen like the Browns look like and, you know, the Jets look like in the last few years, team building in New Orleans right now, not tier one. If you take a linebacker here,
you could play him off the edge.
But it's still not sound. I mean, this is not.
I mean, what has been? I guess they've at least got their salary cap a little bit a better shape now.
They just keep kicking the can down the damn road. But
yeah, the Bears take Will Campbell after they basically he says this is left tackle. But he would have to play. They're basically bringing him in to take Braxton Jones's job, right?
I don't get this, man.
It's a weird pick.
I'm going to scream this until I can. We're not going to see Banks come off the board for a little bit here. Kelvin Banks from Texas to play left tackle. I mean, even if you get to this point, number 10 overall, I think you start considering Josh Simmons from Ohio State over a Will Campbell personally. I just don't get it. I get that Campbell played well in the SEC, but I just, we'll talk about this over the course of the next 5 weeks for sure. But I just, I don't get it, man. It definitely completes their offensive line on paper as they acquired the three interior guys, Jonah Jackson, Joe Tooney, and Drew Dahlman and stuff from free agency and trades. And Darnell Wright, who was the first round pick 2 years ago. I get it 100%. I just don't get the player, you know, pegged here. I hope DJ's wrong with this one. Longhorns cornerback Thorpe Ward winner goes 11. That's a great landing spot that has been mocked quite a bit. Another Longhorn here, fantasy relevance. Matthew Golden, the first receiver off the board, 12th overall to the Dallas Cowboys to play opposite to CeeDee Lamb.
I mean, I think that they're
is that the nuts?
Sets, I think their skill sets and their profiles fit each other very, very, very nicely. Matthew Golden with the definite speed to burn with the 4.29 40 time, but also the sticky hands, the contortion ability, the stuff where it's like, you know, the stuff that we've seen CeeDee Lamb do down in the red zone and the back pylon and all the rest of that. You can have two like dueling monsters down there doing this kind of stuff with the way that Matthew Golden has that, you know, that real Odell Beckham flair to his game. And you get two guys who are some of the best route runners, you know, Matthew Golden, the best, cleanest route runner in this whole entire draft. Dynamic speed. They've been trying to get a solid number two there with CeeDee Lamb. I do think Matthew Golden would come in and be probably one of the. I mean, does that become one of the better wide receiver duos in the league? Right, and it'll be up there with Jefferson and Addison, or you know,
I think potentially. Brown, I definitely wouldn't label it that day one, but I'd potentially put it up into that top conversation. So that was a name, Golden, in the last mock 2.0. Daniel Jeremiah had 30th overall to the Bills, moved him up to 12. And then the next name on here, Malachi Starks, is a safety from Georgia. We talked about this on yesterday's show, the flat circle of the NFL draft. Malachi Starks was 32nd, the last pick in round one, the last mock. And this one, he has him going 13th overall. He says, the further we get into the evaluation process, the more I find teams are in love with Starks.
What about Booker? I think that'd be a good spot for Booker. Is that too early to take a guard?
Good spot for Booker, Campbell, Starks, a lot of guys. I think there's a lot of guys that fit into Miami.
Yeah. Tyler Warren to the Colts. So they see, dude, they're just like me. They see that number 44 and they say, that looks like Dallas Clark to me.
That's it.
You know? It's just, hey, dude, it is what it is, even though he would be the perfect lion. The guy walks around and he looks like Dan Campbell.
I don't think anybody's ever seen Tyler Warren and Dan Campbell in the same building at the same time. They are literally the same person.
Need to test his DNA and make sure, you know, Dan Campbell wasn't playing some game in Pennsylvania up there about 20 years ago. Let's see. Will Johnson, the previously thought of kind of CB1 in this class coming into the season, goes to the Falcons. They certain that kind of fits with what the Falcons have generally looked for, right? In their in their corners, long, rangy,
not the fastest.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think he probably comes in and how long is AJ Terrell signed for?
Terrell was drafted in 20, so he got a new contract. He's probably got a new. Has he got a new contract last year?
Oh, I thought he got a new deal last season. I could be wrong.
4 year, $80 million last year. Yeah, so he's signed through.
Dude, Will Johnson, AJ Terrell feels pretty dirty. Feels good. You need to do so. You just don't pick another skill guy, please. Address the defense.
Tet McMillan, come on down.
Crazy. Oh, God. a redundant player to Drake London. Gray Zabel, one of our favorites from the Senior Bowl, goes to the Arizona Cardinals. I think that's a great pick here. Mike Green, you were talking yesterday about, dude, you can't take an offensive lineman here, even though you got to protect Burrow and protect that passing game. You said take one of these edge dudes that falls, and that's what DJ has going on here.
Yeah, I mean, there's really a couple things we talked about yesterday. You can go right guard, you can go corner, but you can go edge. And a big sentiment that I'm not going to say good friend because he's not a good friend, but a person we look up to is Michael Lombardi, who will often say fourth quarter pass rush is what wins you championships. Fourth quarter pass rush is what's going to get you through the playoffs. And it was no better sentiment than what we saw last year from the Eagles and their ability to get to the quarterback in the fourth quarter week after week after week after week and get themselves all the way to the finish line. So the Bengals, you know, as much as you can score points, you got to be able to get that quarterback on the ground in the fourth quarter and get that ball back to Burrow. So they go edge here and kind of replace Sam Hubbard. And if they lose Trey Hendrickson, they lose him after this year, but you at least have a sick duo in 2025.
Colston Loveland here at 18 to the Seahawks. I'm not sure. This is DJ saying, look, at this point, Colston Loveland's fallen too far. And I got to shoehorn him in somewhere before I get into the 20s because it's going to be bad. I think Loveland's going to go earlier than people think.
Yeah. I think the floor for Loveland is the Rams, who I think are picking at 20. They're at 26. That's further down than I thought it was. But I think that's the absolute floor for a Colston Loveland. But, I mean, here in Seattle, it's definitely an interesting landing spot. I don't think it's right. But having three kind of slot dominators in Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Cooper Kupp, and Colston Loveland would be interesting for sure. 19th overall, Donovan Ezeruku from Boston College. I mean, another edge rusher. Feels like every year Tampa drafts an edge rusher, and now we get the fun. Now the fun flows. Denver picks Omari and Hampton as the second back off the field at 20.
Yahtzee, man. Yeah, just Yahtzee, dude. I would love to see Omari and Hampton there. I would love to see how Sean Payton would just – look, man, he's saying I got to get – you know – that's the other thing is people don't give Omari and Hampton enough credit for how he can catch. And Payton loves to target these guys in the middle of the field. He's a big, bruising, awesome player. I fell in love with him the first time I saw him before he was just the consensus running back too, Cody. I'll never forget me telling you, it's like, well, I don't care, man. Like, I don't care what I do for the rest of these guys. I've seen enough of them to know that there's no way that Omari and Hampton is not going to at least be my RB2 in this class. It's just like, I did the work on him. I'm just like, there's just no way. He's like, I could talk and talk and talk about everything that he brings, but you can even, gosh, if you were the alien that came down to Earth and you just looked at these guys all lined up in a row and you say, who's the best running back? He pointed him and say, that guy.
One question. Thursday night, April 24th, we're going to be sitting there in Tampa. He's going to come off the board at pick 20. Genty's going to have Ben already picked at 6 by the Raiders. Hell of draft capital for Genty. But Omarion goes round 1 to Broncos. Your first thoughts for 2025 regular season, seasonal drafts would be which guy ahead of each other? Would you still have Genty ahead of Hampton, even though the Denver situation's a little more, you know, amendable for running backs?
I would, but Cody, let me just tell you this. I would still have Ashton Genty ahead, but I would have those guys probably back-to-back, and they are going to be a lot higher than with those two known landing spots than they currently are on the latest update to version 1.1 of the Roster Watch Best Ball Cheat Sheet.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.